Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. The art world experienced a loss on August 13th, 2020. The Venezuelan artist, American artist, Lucila Tortado, known for her vibrant paintings, which often combine landscapes and self-portraiture, died just before her 100th birthday. She gained recognition for her work late in life, yet her career spanned nearly a century. She lived in New York and Mexico City before settling in California. She was a contemporary and friend of Noguchi and Kahlo. And throughout the years, she associated with members of Dinaton, Mexican muralism, surrealism, and the feminist art movement. It was through the estate of her third husband, Lee McCullen, that a trove of her work was discovered. She often used experimental techniques to explore the interconnectedness of all forms of life. Here she is explaining her art practice in her own words.
Any idea that came to me, I would work it out. You know, how do you do that? And then I'd work it out. I'd try many ways. And that's what happened with the crayons and the ink and all that. It's the way it starts. It's what would happen? And how fast can I go? So I decided that, you know, I was related to the trees, to everything here, both good and bad. And that's where I want to be. No sending me off to another planet when we get too busy here.
A new exhibition, Lucila Hurtado, Together Forever, opens today at Hauser & Wirth in Chelsea. It's the gallery's first new show after the shutdown this spring. It surveys more than 30 works from the 1960s to 2020. Joining me now to discuss the exhibition is Hauser & Wirth partner Graham Steele. Graham, welcome to All of It.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be here and amazing to hear Lucila's voice again.
It was wonderful, wasn't it? You worked closely with her before she passed. What was extraordinary about her as an artist to you personally?
Very perfect question to just sort of dive into. I think so much has been made of, you know, in the introduction to Lucila, there's always these discussions of her relationships with other artists. Some of the biggest names of the 20th century, who she was friends with and collaborated with. And I think what is really exciting about this show is that we're really honing in on what makes her unique. We had done at the gallery a show in 2019 in January that focused in on the early work. And there was a huge dialogue with Tamayo, for example, and the early resist pieces, the crayon pieces that Lucila herself was just talking about. I think what makes Lucila distinctive is that there is this moment in the late 1960s and very strongly in the 1970s, the majority of the works in the show are from the 1970s, where she comes into her own style, into her own voice, using her body as a starting off point for these amazing self-portraits. And there's basically three different kinds of self-portraits in the show. And they all demonstrate the way in which Lucila had this remarkable sense of self, which she imparted into the works. And I think that as the scholarship around Lucila grows and as people are experiencing more and more in depth of Lucila's work, it was very important for us to show these pieces because I think, and I know that the family feels the same way, that these really show her contribution to art history in that very specific way and that very specific moment. This is when she is in dialogue with a lot of the other first and second wave feminist artists in California, and she's really taking her power as an artist physically into the work.
When, I'm going to ask you to give us a little bit of a history lesson for people who don't know about her. When did her art practice begin, and what were her primary inspirations?
You know, the earliest pieces that we have, and the amazing thing about Lucila as an artist is, and the exciting thing for art historians and art lovers alike, is that she kept everything. So we have the earliest pieces are when she's about 20 or 21. She came from Venezuela at the age of 8 to New York to join her mother. And she lived in New York for this incredibly tumultuous time. You know, if you think of the fact that she's born in 1920, these earliest pieces, and the earliest piece that she has is a drawing of a gas stove. And so she's drawing the world around her. There's another piece that she has at the age of, I believe, 23, is this amazing study of beets. And on the back, there's a little diary entry about her relationship with Rufino Tamayo, who at that time was teaching at Dalton in New York. And you know, this is in the middle of World War II. She is already at this stage a mother of two children, and she was abandoned by her first husband. She was already ensconced in the art world, as the introduction had explained. She was friends with Isamu Noguchi, and she actually became friends with Noguchi through her love of dance. And Noguchi's half sister was a dancer. And brought her into this whole world. And so she really started practicing, always in secret, and she kept all of these things. If you think of Luchita, moved many, many times. With her second husband, the famous surrealist Wolfgang Pallen. She went to Mexico City to be with Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera. She then came back to the United States. She went back to Venezuela. She moved the funny story is that she didn't take any winter clothes with her when she went to Venezuela. And when she came back, she had to leave Venezuela again as an unmarried woman. The family was not as receptive to her being there, shall we say. And she came and she went to California because it was warmer. And there she and her third husband, Lee Mulliken, went between San Francisco and eventually ended up in Los Angeles. And they, of course, then also were spending a great deal of time in Taos, New Mexico. So throughout all of these migrations, across North and South America, she would keep these pieces, which is really remarkable. I mean, if you think of how much paper or how much sort of the ephemera of life comes and goes in all of our lives, for her to keep these pieces that she made was really exceptional. And these were things that she wasn't necessarily showing to other people, especially at the time that we start the exhibition in the 60s and 70s. These are pieces that we interviewed Matt Mulliken, her son, and another important artist. And Matt was very aware of her making these works. She always had a small studio, a corner of the room, et cetera, within the house. And so he was aware of these, but she wasn't really showing this work around her. There was one show that she did in the early 70s, around the time of Woman House, this famous moment with Judy Chicago and Miriam Shapiro. Via Selmans was in this group as well, and there's amazing documentation of Luchita being in this group. She was older because, of course, by 1973, she was already in her 50s. And her work that she exposed was a very important series, a fantastic series of text pieces, of text paintings. And they use the words, things as short as ism or you, me, into more complex statements. The title of her first museum retrospective at the Serpentine comes from one of these paintings, and it is called I Live, I Die, I Will Be Reborn. And embedded in this sort of abstract geometric patterning were these words. And so she was making these statements of identity, but through text, which of course was a common theme that you see in various different feminist art at the time. But these portraits of herself were things that were much more private. And so these were the almost kind of mementos or incredibly important works in the context of what she was making for herself. And I think also one of the reasons that it's so exciting for these to see is the way that they play with the viewer. when you walk into the show, you are presented with five of the earlier pieces from the late 60s and into the early 70s of more kind of traditional self-portraiture. There's one very beautiful, fully painted with a red background, and her hair is down. You very, very rarely see Luchita with her hair down, and this is the only self-portrait that I can think of with her hair down, and inscribed around it is a poem about her family, and there's references to a few other artists. André Breton is one of them, but it's really about her family and her identity, and the text devolves into the repetition of the word there, and so she's sort of defining her place in a way. And I think what is really exciting about an artist who was never seeking approval, these were all things for herself. And in a way, when you get into the very famous pieces that everyone sort of has, she became very celebrated for, which is the I Am paintings, where you have a viewpoint of Luchita looking down on her body. And some people find these claustrophobic because they're very closely cropped around her. But the idea of this displacement, in a way, of your body as you are the viewer coming in, I think that there's something really interesting that happens when there's a sort of indexical relationship between Luchita's body, your body, between the passage of time, between an expression of what Luchita is not necessarily just feeling, but moving through. The idea that you don't see Luchita's head in these pieces, you literally take Luchita's place. It's almost Luchita putting you in her place. But also with the understanding that this is her body, and this is a moment in time. And there are, you know, ones of these paintings where she's looking down and she's holding a cigarette. She secretly smoked at night. She was painting these pieces at night. Some of them were done in Chile when she and her husband were living there, and her studio was literally a closet. And so there are these peeking beams of light that are coming in from an open door. And so you do get the feeling of this sort of small world, but also she's sort of staking her claims, she's sort of demarcating her territory in a way in those pieces. And while those had been seen and put into the context, this whole sort of trajectory of her career, what is really exciting is that what had been less seen was another whole series of self-portraits that also used this sort of indexical relationship, and that was of her shadow. And we included, as a kind of marker of the beginning of this shadow series in the exhibition, a text piece. She was an amazing diarist, and she wrote down everything from the earliest diaries of the 1940s are sadly lost. We're hoping that they're going to turn up in a storage unit somewhere. but through the 60s into the 80s, she was keeping this amazing diary, and it was poetry. It was her thoughts. It was what she ate, who she saw. But there were pieces that came out of these, out of the context of the diary, and she would write messages or poems in her sketchbooks. And one such message says, the only true facsimile of me is in my shadow. Mm-hmm. And so she does these self-portraits of her shadow. And these come from her, the first medium that she was sort of given outside of drawing was photography. And that was something, when I say given, you know, she was an incredible beauty and all of these amazing photographers photographed her. But her husband also, Wolfgang Pollan, also encouraged her to take photos. And she was a remarkable photographer in her own right. In the archive, there's remarkable mm-hmm. photographs of her throughout, from the 40s through her life. And she very often, there's hundreds of photographs of her shadow. And she didn't paint these pieces from photographs, but it's interesting that there is this sort of parallel trajectory within the career. And so that when you come and see these paintings on paper and these drawings on paper of her shadow, they're even more remarkable because, again, they mm-hmm. put you in the place of Luchita, that you complete the body in a way that is giving the shadow, but also that there is this idea that there's always something lost in that indexable relationship. There's always, you're never going to inhabit Luchita's body. And even Luchita, looking at these, there's always this idea that is she painting her soul? Is she painting a memory? Is she painting a moment? There's times where the shadow is doubled or tripled. So there's this sort of shift in time where is this something that Luchita's over the course of a day, weeks, painting herself in what you can somehow achieve or somehow perceive on the paper, but of course the full complexity of what she's feeling and who she is never fully given away. So there's this always this sort of tantalizing loss that you have, that you're somehow in this privileged position of being Luchita for a moment as you walk through this show. And Luchita would always talk about herself in different incarnations in a way, that she had said that she was so many different Luchitas. And you get this idea of an amazingly complex artist, an amazingly complex person who, yes, knew all of these famous artists. But as you walk through the show, there's no denying the importance of Luchita in her own right, in her own words, and in her own body. And that's what's so exciting, I think, about people who will experience the first half of this show.
I had two pages of questions. You literally answered them all in one answer. I was like, this is fascinating. It's fascinating. I feel like I'm having a lovely art history class. So it opens today.
I am thrilled always to talk about Luchita. I hope I didn't talk too much, and I can always more. I think
I do have to wrap though.
Of course. Okay, perfect. Well, then everyone should enjoy the exhibition and come and get the experience of being in Luchita's place. It's a privileged position that she afforded us, and it's something exciting to experience.
And take this podcast with you. When you go, you'll have your own audio tour from one of the partners of Hauser & Wirth. Graham, thank you so much for being with us, and thank you for your enthusiasm. That was fantastic.
Absolutely a pleasure. Absolutely a pleasure. Have a wonderful day.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.